Hello, my name is John Walter. I'm an artist. I've created this exhibition called Capsid, which is all about the protein shells that are inside viruses. And maybe that seems like a strange thing to make an exhibition about, but hopefully what you'll see as we go on this journey is that there's a lot that art and life can learn from viruses that can be applied into other things and how we think and how we experience the world. So welcome to the first room. And the first thing you see is a big wallpaper. And that is a picture of a capsid made by a scientist. I've been working with a virologist called Greg Towers, who's based at UCL. And his work really looks at the stories around viruses, and particularly the capsid of HIV. And one of the things we should think about, first of all, is that viruses are made up of multiple layers. And the exterior of the virus, the protein shell, the envelope, might be the thing you've seen on telly. So say in a common cold, you've got a spherical virus that looks a bit like a football, and then inside that is a capsid that is like a smaller football. But in a complex virus, like a retrovirus and HIV, the capsid isn't spherical. And in the case of HIV, it's made up of lots of different proteins, some of which are hexagonal and some of which are pentagonal. In fact, there are exactly 12 pentamers, pentagonal proteins, and about 250 hexagonal ones. And the way this fits together is interesting on a structural level. And this is a nano level we're talking about. This thing is so tiny. But also, it holds together in a very strange way, just enough that it can do its job and then break apart later on. So this is a computer-generated image of a virus that we've made as a wallpaper. And there's two things hung on this wall. One is an animation of a life cycle of an HIV that I've drawn as a kind of cartoon, initially to illustrate for myself what's going on and straighten out the narrative, but then also as a kind of rubric for a film that we're going to see later on in the exhibition. And I suppose cartooning is a big part of what I do. I'm not trying to be a visual communicator in the same way that an illustrator is. This whole show is born out of my fascination with things, and I hope that you might be interested in them too. But illustration and cartooning are great ways of having fun. And the show is about fun. It's not a depressing show. HIV isn't depressing. And the project grows from a previous exhibition I made called Alien Sex Club that was much more about the societal factors around HIV. Whereas this exhibition is much more about what viruses do and how sneaky they are and how we might use personification to think about them. So the other thing on this wall is a fist, a drinking fist, a beer cozy, a Hulk hand that's holding a weird object that's covered in paisley. And actually, paisley is something that I've been thinking about very late on in the project as an idea that gets transmitted like a virus. So paisley travels from Mesopotamia or Persia down the Silk Road to Kashmir and then gets imported to Europe via the East India Company and made in Scotland during the Industrial Revolution. So viruses and ideas travel in very similar ways. That's one of the things we might want to think about. There's a big painting in here called a cofactor. I'm going to come to them a bit more later. And there's also a big lumpy painting called an innate sensing mechanism. And so this is really an introduction to some of the things you might see. Welcome to room two. We're in another world now. This is a room with a floor made up of works on paper, silkscreen prints, watercolours, gouaches, little doodly things that are made with paint pens. And then the walls are painted yellow, a kind of buttermilk, and there's two or three different series of paintings in here, maybe four actually. We've got the cofactor paintings, the innate sensing mechanisms, the budding, and the cytoplasms. And let's start with the cytoplasms, which are on your left-hand side going down the long wall. There's five of them, they're square. They're all painted on canvas that's already been primed, and then they're not stretched on frames. And that's really a convenience for me because I don't have an enormous studio and I want to make lots of work quickly. And I work prolifically. You'll see there's a lot of work here. And really that's because I'm trying to make a big thing, a complex thing. And I call what I do maximalism. And by that, I don't just mean that it's complicated looking or over the top or visually luxurious. I mean that it's more than the sum of its parts. So you can look at one part on one scale, one individual thing, or you can look at the exhibition as a whole, and they're the same thing. The genetic code runs through the whole thing, and you can break it apart and reform it, and it's still Capsid, the exhibition. So this has already had a life in London in a completely different venue, but as it's reformed for home in Manchester, it's changed and mutated and become a new show. So the cytoplasm of a cell is the space inside the cell before you get to the nucleus. And this is a really busy place full of things that are designed to kill any foreign genetic material that enters the cell, like a virus. So how does a virus successfully infect a cell? Well, what it does is it pushes the capsid into the cell, which then has to travel through the cytoplasm to the nucleus, where it can repurpose the cell as a sort of factory for making more virus. And what Greg, the scientist I've been working with, his work shows is that the capsid of HIV must interact with the cell and the cytoplasm to disguise itself and obscure itself from detection by the innate sensing mechanisms of the body. And that takes us on to another series. So there's these lumpy paintings. What are these all about? There's things stuck on with expanding foam. There's sewn things. There's things from Japan that I bought. There's a lot of posters that I've acquired from a shop in the northern quarter of Manchester called Clark's Brothers. And they silkscreen these posters in-house. They say things like seasonal greetings or leave your pram outside. And I wanted these things and I didn't know how to use them. Did I cut them up? Could I stick things on them? None of those strategies worked. I had to keep them whole and I had to somehow introduce them into the pictorial field of the painting. And the virus could teach me how to do that through this analogy of the innate sensing mechanism. So if you have a transplant operation, let's say we're going to give you a pig's liver. We need to give you immune suppressant drugs to accept that external organ. It's got a different DNA to it. Now, if you take the drugs, it'll trick your body to accept it. And I wondered, could we trick the painting to accept these posters from Clark's Brothers? And the equivalent in painting terms of the immune suppressant drugs was pattern. And what you're seeing a lot in the exhibition is the role that patterns play, the role of orders of magnitude, the roles of pattern recognition, how there are equivalences within science and art, and how interesting it is to swap the vocabulary from one to the other and see how that might change each discipline. Let's go to the next room. Welcome to room 3. We're in another world again. There's various things going on here, but first of all, what you'll see is a series of costumes on mannequins. And these are costumes that I made for the film that we're going to see later on called A Virus Walks Into a Bar. And they're all onesies. They're bought very often white and dyed. It's very difficult to get a nicely coloured onesie. You can get a good Christmas onesie or an Easter onesie. I didn't want a themed onesie. I wanted to sew trimmings onto them, mims, which are these funny lump stuffed things that I use very often. They're sort of lumps of feeling or emotion or skin tags or something. You'll see the protagonist of the drama. He's called Capsid. He's covered in exactly the right number of hexamers and pentamers that we talked about earlier on, and they're patches that I had made, embroidered. The work is made by hand, and that's very important. Not because I'm some brilliant author, but because by charging the work up, it gives off aura. And that might be sort of going against a lot of 20th century philosophies in art, but I want the work to feel that it's been touched, and that energizes it, and I hope that you can feel that off it. Now, as you go around these objects, there's a series of metal screens that I've made. They're plasma cut, and that's really firing a hot line of air through sheet steel. And it's a very, very butch process compared to a lot of the other things I use, which are to do with traditionally feminine crafts, I suppose. But the approach to putting myself out of my comfort zone and employing techniques that I'm unfamiliar with, techniques of drawing that might distort my draftsmanship, become ways to discover new types of line quality, new types of patterning, new types of emotional territory within the work. And so these screens are then powder coated and baked with this colour. And they're very, very heavy. and they just rest against the wall, and they echo a lot of the patterns that we're seeing throughout the show, including my kind of signature crosshatch pattern. Nearby, there's a wall covered in more of these silkscreen posters from Clark's Brothers, and hung on there is a video called Why Not Sneeze, Peppermint Butler. And some of you may know Peppermint Butler from a TV show called Adventure Time, which has just ended. And Peppermint Butler is an occultist. And the video talks about an imaginary virus that spreads the occult via Madame Blavatsky and Piet Mondrian and certain famous 20th century artists, including Duchamp, who were all known to have associations with Blavatsky. And viruses travel in different ways, and different viruses have different vectors of travel. This isn't a real virus. Don't worry, you're not going to catch anything in the show. But let's turn the corner and we'll go into room four. Welcome to room four, which is a continuation of room three. And what you'll see is that there's three very large paintings called the cofactors. And a lot of the work I've been doing with Towers Lab is to take their narratives and analogies and apply them into how I can innovate my own painting. So the work is not just about illustrating their work, but it's about how their work can actually change art. And so what is a cofactor? Well, the capsid, as it travels through the cytoplasm, has to work with the host cell in collaboration, which is why I've portrayed it as a sneak or some sort of Machiavellian being, because it tricks the cell to hide it. And so lots of virus might attack the cell, lots of capsids might go into the cell, and lots of capsids might die. But the successful capsid will somehow have a conversation with the cytoplasm and invite these cofactors to lock onto it, potentially holding it tight, stop it from breaking up, helping it to the pores of each of the hexamers and pentamers to open and close, which is feeding it to fuel what's going on inside the capsid on its journey. And what is going on inside the capsid? We haven't talked about that. In a simple virus, like a common cold, you'll have a DNA strand. But in a retrovirus, you'll have two RNA strands which get woven into a DNA strand en route through the cell. That's why it's called a retrovirus, because it does everything backwards. And that's why it's so successful as well, because it's got this other level of evading detection by the body's sensing mechanisms. So I've used all these stories to go on journeys with images that include references to children's learning books from my childhood, the Agip logo, which is a petrol brand in Italy. And lots of these images are doubled up because the cofactors are often pairs of particles. And so these become sort of compositional fantasies for me. And the paintings are made from slices of swimming pool noodles and packing foam that are cut through and printed with, in the same way that you might make a potato print. And there's lots of drawing with big acrylic paint markers. Now, on the one hand, I want the paintings to feel like anybody could have made them. So these are very sort of democratic ways of making marks. And sure, okay, I'm this person that's made lots of art for a long time, and so I've got certain knacks of doing things. But hopefully the material properties of the work are decipherable to you. Maybe the plasma cutting and the powder coating is a bit slick and foreign and fabricated, but the paintings are stuff that we can all make. And that fits with my philosophy of the Shonky. And Shonky was a show that I curated recently. And Shonkiness is something to think about in the exhibition in the same way that maximalism is, in that the Shonky is about the asymmetrical, the awkward, the unfashionable, the bombastic potentially, the out of sync, the elegantly inelegant or inelegantly elegant. Anyway, it might be that there's a prevailing taste and something does something else, and that's where my work might lie. Let's keep going. We're going to go into See a Virus Walks into a Bar. So when I started working with Greg and people were asking us what we were doing, I started saying, well, imagine a virus walks into a bar. And then I thought, hang on, that's probably a film we should make. And this film lies about the science by personifying it on a human scale, but that's a very convenient way of telling the story and exposing Greg's revolutionary research into the capsid of HIV. Capsid is played by Jamie Bradley, and he rolls up to the bar in a Zorb. And a Zorb is a brilliant version of a virus particle because it actually has the same sort of layers that a virus particle might. And the capsid has to trick his way into the bar, which represents the cell. And there's some bouncers, some sensors on the cell, on the pub, that don't want to let him in. They know this is a dangerous character. But using charm and sophistry, he tricks some of the cell's sensors that are located inside the pub to come out and let him in. And then all hell breaks loose, because once he's in the pub, he can use all his social skills and humour and offers of drinks to get to the bar, get to the nucleus of the cell, and infect the pub. And what you have really is that life cycle that we saw earlier in the cartoon turned into a drama set somewhere between Twin Peaks The Return, which I was watching a lot around this time, and you'll hear certain references to Nine Inch Nails, industrial music. Oddly enough, some of the sounds come from Bananarama songs that I reversed and sped up. And also to things like Coronation Street, which I have a love of soap opera. So this is a kind of viral soap opera. So we're back at the start of the exhibition in what I'll call Room 6. And there's two more cofactor paintings. You'll see lots of other different images embedded in there. There's a little dragon that I found when I was on holiday in Spain. And I suppose the work overall is about how do you combine disparate things, either physically or spatially or metaphorically. And then that can go on lots of different journeys in different ways. But you'll find a video in here called Laura's Mutants. And it's a series of quotes, jargon, a list, jargon that I've overheard in the lab when I've gone to meetings. So there's scientific jargon, there's also references to pop culture, there's Chaz and Dave songs, there's other bits of reading I've been doing around queer theory. And really, taken out of context, these phrases can sound really poetic and take on different meanings. Laura's Mutants refers to a strain of HIV that Tower's lab have been using, that a former lab member, Laura, had made and frozen, and everyone loves using. Apparently it's really good for doing tests on. And I heard this phrase coming up a lot, and I was like, what is a Laura's Mutant? Thinking it was some really technical term, and it turns out to just be slang. So the work operates in this way, that in this playful way that can slip in and out of meaning and nonsense and poetry and fun and emotion. And there's no message to be had as such. There's no meaning. Everything means nothing. That's my brilliant send-off for you today. But you should revel in that, because that's what life is, that's what DNA is. It's a complex thing. You've been involved in a complex adaptive system. That's my best way of thinking about maximalism at the moment, which is that there's this show, Capsid, that you've been in, that's made up of all these different series. Some series are made up of 10, 20, 4. Some are unique things, and they can get remixed into different combinations, just in the same way that the genome can. And there's also a lot of junk in the DNA. There's a lot of extraneous information, non sequiturs, segues, that can get activated during those recombinations. So there's a lot of imagery in this exhibition that isn't scientific, that's just to do with my identity as an artist, my vocabulary. Look, I'm sure you've got loads of questions, and I'm sorry I'm not there to help you with them, but I hope this has been of some use, and enjoy the rest of your day.